Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor and producer and director of the acclaimed TV series, Chuck, Mr. Yes. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All righty.
Well, hello there.
Hello. You have a new green screen. That's so exciting.
I do. I'm trying to like modernize my podcast studio.
Yeah.
Simplify it. I think, you know, I got the new mic.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, in the very beginning when I was like, okay, so we need this, we need that. And I was giving you recommendations on mics and this, and you just went off and got your own mic. And now you have one that is just like mine in Calgary.
Yeah,
and so, your green screen is now evolved into one that I have, like one I have in Vegas, where you just pull it up out of a, it just
so
kind of comes
easy.
Up. It's much easier. So I'm happy that, you know, after 2 years, you finally have kind of come around a little bit to my camp,
to the modern,
so to speak. Yeah,
to the modern podcast world.
Welcome to the modern podcast world, Robbie McNeil.
Exactly.
So really excited to hear that you have better or more easy to deal with equipment.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Because let's face it, that collapsible green screen, not only is it difficult to collapse down and open back up again, I think it's a health hazard, to be honest. That thing flips out so hard.
Podcasting is dangerous for all you aspiring podcasters out there.
Yes.
It is it's dangerous work.
Yes,
it really is.
But most importantly, with that collapsible screen, which is what I still use in Calgary, it is rounded. It's sort of rounded. So that means always fidgeting with the sides to make sure that it's not showing the room, you know. So there's issues with that thing. As much as it's portable and you can collapse it down, it's not a square, you know.
No.
It's sort of an oval is what it is. Which,
well, the funny thing to me as you're talking about green screens is, I know you use a green screen. I don't use a green screen. I'm actually in space right now, right out in front of the Voyager.
Wow.
And I'm all natural with this.
You know, it's so impressive because I don't see any type of breathing apparatus that you're using, and you are able to somehow survive.
Float in space, because that's how committed to an authentic natural podcast.
I
podcast naturally.
That's unbelievable.
Yes. And for you aspiring podcasters out there, I would recommend organic podcasting, natural podcasting.
You must have a side deal with either Richard Branson or Elon Musk, where they actually shoot you into space.
Out.
Yes. Before every episode.
Every podcast, I go float in space because I want to be natural.
You know, the consummate professional, you definitely are that. Wow.
Thank you. I want to talk about my hat too. Enough about podcasting gear.
Yeah.
This is from Capitol Reef National Park.
Oh.
Rebecca and I just went down for a couple of days. Doing some exploring the national parks here in Utah, Capitol Reef National Park. Unbelievable. It is so stunning and just awe-inspiring. I feel like it's a very underrated national park, and it wasn't too crowded. We were able to get around pretty easily. It was just incredible. And I got this hat. So there you go.
It's a cool looking hat. It's a beautiful area. If you want photos, go to either Robbie or Rebecca's Instagram. They have posted
recently.
Yes.
The hat is phenomenal. Let's just face it.
It's a nice hat. Is it dark brown? Is it, what color is that? Gray?
It's kind of like a muted brown.
Yeah.
Brown. I love the patch. I just like National Park kind of gap.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Okay.
All right. There you go.
Like it too.
It was a great trip. What are we doing this week? What is the episode? I'm just back from a national park. I have no idea what we're going to talk about today.
All right. So this week's episode is Juggernaut.
Juggernaut? That's what we're watching?
It's a great name.
It's cool.
It's a really good name. I used to play a video game where there was a character called, or a thing that you had to fight against, that was called the Juggernaut. And it was very difficult to defeat. So I remember, so it's sort of like, you know, the term Juggernaut is a,
it inspires
unstoppable,
like a
force is, yes, what it is.
A military battle with a giant force of some kind. Okay.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to go watch. And
let's go watch it.
Let's go watch this episode. We'll be right back with our recap and review of Juggernaut. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. We're back from watching Juggernaut.
Yes. Scary monsters. Oh,
goodness gracious.
Scary monsters and ships that look like they have gas problems.
Gastroenteritis? What?
Yeah, some kind of gaseous anomaly that's leaking out of that giant ship. It was frightening.
It was. Very frightening. All right, let's start with our poetry synopsis. Malon's in trouble. Away team sent to vent gas. Vihar are not myth.
Oh, okay. Nice. Nice.
Let me hear this.
Right, here we go with a nice limerick for Juggernaut. It goes a little something like this. There once was a Malon waste freighter with a real scary monster perpetrator. Janeway had a plan B. Seven had plan C and D. But B'Elanna ended up the Terminator.
Bam! Terminator, perpetrator, freighter. You got all the aiders in there. Good for you.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Nice little limerick.
Yeah. Was that what percentage was you?
That was all me.
What? Good job. Okay.
That was all me. Thank you. I'm very proud of myself.
I am.
You've evolved. Out of 10.
It's usually RJ, but you've evolved. Yes. So I'm pretty excited.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You have an evolution. Okay.
Yeah. Juggernaut.
Yeah.
Story by Brian Fuller. Story by Brian Fuller. I guess that's written by Brian Fuller.
No, well, the teleplay was written by Fuller, Sagan, and Biller. So I got Biller right.
Okay.
So the story idea was pitched by Fuller, which they said, yes, we're going to go with it. And they let him write it, as well as Nick Sagan and Ken Biller. And I guess Biller on that one, didn't I? I think.
Yeah, you did. So. Yeah.
Okay.
No, Biller made sense because of the.
And you agreed with me. You agreed with me totally. On that one. Yep.
Totally.
And I got the director right.
Alan Krager. Yes. Yeah.
I got it right on this one.
And he did a great job. I thought it was really well directed. And we'll get into the good and the bad of it all as far as an episode, but as far as directing, again, Alan just has good instincts and the way he, you know, kind of gets the camera in there to feel the experience of the characters is really great. He did a great job. Let's talk about our guest stars. I'm going to do what I normally do. First job ever. That's about all I know. I didn't go deep. So all I know is what their first job is. But Ron Canada.
I just love that name.
I do too.
I want you to change your name to Robbie America.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
I like it.
Go ahead, Ron Canada.
Ron Canada, who plays Fessick. His very first job was in 1983. He did a movie with Steve Guttenberg called The Man Who Wasn't There.
Oh my goodness. 83 with Guttenberg. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's reaching deep there.
That's Ron Canada. I think Ron Canada also was on Battlestar or.
What?
I think really? So. But again, I don't have all this research. So, or Babylon 5 or one of those shows. He was like a regular recurring. So he's got some sci-fi cred, but that was his first job. The Man Who Wasn't There, Steve Guttenberg, 1983. Okay. Mm-hmm. Lee Ehrenberg, who plays Pelk.
Yes, my
his old very buddy Lee. First job, Lee Ehrenberg. His first job was in 1987, a movie with Martin Short called Cross My Heart.
Wow.
1987.
Huh.
And then last we have Scott Clace, who played Drimk. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Basically, okay. The monster, right? He was the Drink. Monster guy.
Yeah.
His first job was in the 90s, believe it or not. Mm. He did a TV movie with John Mahoney, who was the father on Frasier.
Mm.
John Mahoney was the big star back then of this TV movie called The $10 Million Getaway.
I've never heard of that. But okay. No,
I actually haven't heard of any of these credits.
Wow.
That's what I love about it, is that it's usually your first job is often on something that's kind of obscure. Although Lee Ehrenberg was in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. He was one of the pirates, right?
That's right.
And it's kind of what he's known for is.
Yes. And he also was at UCLA with me. He's older
was he
than
really?
I am. Yeah, he's older than I am. So he's a few years ahead of me. But he was at the UCLA theater department back in the day. And Lee's great. He's really, really great. It's interesting because there's a lot of Easter eggs in this episode. Like, for instance, the character that Ron Canada plays,
yes.
Fessick, that's the same name that's used in Princess Bride. So
oh, is
like,
it really?
Yeah, that character exists in Princess Bride. And then later there's more, and as we get to them, I will reveal the other Easter eggs.
I didn't know that. Let's hear. I want to hear about that. Sure. Okay, cool.
Sure.
Well, okay. Let's get into the recap. So the first image we have is of this giant alien ship, a freighter, flying through space. And as it passes by, we see this gas. And my first thought was like, the giant farting ship is flying through space. So I'm going to call it the fart ship. So the fart ship flies by, and then we cut inside to a very cool corridor inside this alien ship. And my first thought was, oh, it's a Borg corridor. It looked just like the Borg corridors with a little
redressed and a little extra, Okay. Okay.
Anyway, I thought that was kind of clever.
So maybe that's our first Easter egg right there.
There's a Borg corridor.
Yeah, a Borg corridor. Okay.
And we see somebody with like what looks like a toy. I didn't know what it was at first. I didn't know if it was a tool that he was testing for something, but it turns out it's a toy ship.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks a lot like the freighter, sort of. Yes. And he's flying it down the corridor, and he takes us into a larger room where he crashes it into another alien buddy of his. Mm-hmm. And we learn that this is a toy for this commander's kid. This
controller is the name that he uses here. Yeah.
Yeah. The controller's kid. That's going to be a toy for him. And suddenly there's a crash, a shake, and there's a rupture in tank 4. Mm-hmm. They can't eject tank 4. Then bam, another one. Tank 6 is rupturing.
Yeah.
You know, so we get a little action. He tells one of the aliens to go seal it manually. They can't seal these tanks. And he goes, I'll be infected. And he's like, nope, that's an order. Go.
Yeah. And, well, first of all, he says, I didn't sign up for core labor. You know, so already you now know that there's two different classifications of crew members, the ones that are on the bridge and away from the core and the ones that are in the core. So my question for you is the alien, the Vahar, was he the guy sent down to shut them?
Yeah.
You know, he's the same guy then, right?
I think. Okay. Yes. Okay. That has to be the same guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, their makeup is very cool. So they're Malon. So we recognize them as Malon, but they've got blisters and like sores.
Boils
and there's smoke all through it. The place looks grimy, this freighter. Clearly, this is a toxic environment they work in from the get-go.
Very much so, yes.
So off of him ordering this alien to go seal it manually, go to core labor, do some core labor. Mm-hmm. I think of core labor more as sit-ups or planks, but... I guess for them, core labor is a different thing.
You got fitness on your mind right now.
I really do.
Okay.
Then we have our opening credits off of that. And then we come into Club Tuvok.
Club Tuvok.
He's in his club gear. He's got his club look going on with the robe and the dark lights. And
lo and behold, it's your lady that's at Club B'Elanna. Tuvok.
Yeah, he's got a lamp and he's describing this lamp. And we realize it's B'Elanna in there for some meditation lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn in the scene that she's been ordered to do this meditation by Chakotay because she broke the doctor's camera in engineering when he was taking photos. And she got pissed off because she kept saying, stop, don't take my picture. And he did it anyway.
Why was he taking photos?
I don't remember.
It's for his photo essay, A Day in the Life of the Warp Core. Remember that?
That's right. Yes, that's right.
Funny.
Yes. But Chakotay ordered her to meditate. She's very grumpy about this.
Oh, yeah.
So he says, okay, sit down. Close your eyes if you want or don't. We're going to start to meditate. And he starts asking her to like picture the flame and she starts laughing.
Yes.
And I immediately thought about Rebecca and I, because I like to meditate sometimes. And she
likes to laugh at you.
She likes to laugh about it. Wow. So this was a very relatable. I'm sure people there's, you know, the two schools of meditators and non-meditators out there that could relate to the scene, both sides of the scene. Hmm. But she does fight through her giggles and she remembers all of a sudden she has this memory.
Right. Before you get in the memory, the reason why she's giggling, you do recall, is because she's visualizing Tuvok as a little Vulcan with his cute little pointy ears. Yes.
Mm-hmm. She thinks that's adorable.
Yeah.
But she does remember all of a sudden she has a flash from when she was a kid of a classmate that terrorized her in grade school, in elementary school, or I think she says grade school. I
can't grammar remember. School.
Grammar school. That's what she said.
You remember the name?
Daniel Bird is his name.
And that's the other Easter egg.
What is that?
The same guy's name that was Harry's buddy in the episode Non Sequitur when he goes back to Earth and his buddy Daniel Bird takes his place on Voyager while he goes back into this time, this alternate reality. That's so they're rehashing names. They are rehashing the exact same name. And this guy's buddies with Harry. So it's a little strange because I would guess that Torres is older than Harry, right? So Daniel Bird should be older than Harry. But Daniel Bird in that episode is Harry's contemporary, his best buddy. So again, they're using all these names, Fessick from, you know, Princess Bride, and then Daniel Bird from the episode Non Sequitur. Wow. It's just like, what is going on here?
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
Okay.
Good Easter eggs, good catches, very good catches. But we realized Daniel Bird in grammar school terrorized her. He called her Miss Turtlehead.
Mm-hmm.
And so she attacked him on the gyro swing.
Yeah.
And as she's recalling this, she's getting really angry. Like that rage is coming out. And Tuvok says, you know, your anger can be a source of strength for you, mm-hmm. but your rage runs deep and you shouldn't let it drive you. You shouldn't let it control you.
Mm-hmm.
And then he calls her Miss Turtlehead. And she's like, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm done. And he says, you're easily triggered.
He was just testing her.
Yeah. But she's done. She's out.
I wouldn't have said Miss Turtlehead. I would have said MTH. I would have given the acronym, you know,
that,
just to stay away from too much direct triggering like that.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. We go to the bridge next, and Hera steps on the bridge and walks over to Tuvok.
By the
way, I want to say, where is Paris coming from? I'm going to say he was in the bathroom. He had to go 10-100.
You think that's where he was?
10-100, by the way, is code on a film set for I've got to go to the bathroom.
Bathroom or washroom, if you're Canadian.
Washroom. Mm-hmm. Yes. So I think Paris was 10-100, came back, and there was Tuvok. And he's like, oh, there's Tuvok. I'll check in. How'd it go with B'Elanna? He's checking in. You know, Tuvok's like, not great. And but, you know, we're going to keep at it. And Paris is like, this is not going to be easy. This is like, Paris says, this is like getting a Ferengi to leave its estate to charity. That's how hard this is going to be.
I think it's at this point that Harry picks up a distress signal.
Yep,
and he does. We make our way to the source of the distress signal, and we come across all these escape pods that seem to be just floating in space there.
Just kind of tumbling around like a debris field almost. Yeah,
pretty much. And we detect theta radiation. So we look, you know, we scan all these pods, and it seems like there's only two life signs that are present. We beam those two over into sick bay.
And we also find out when we see this debris field, these are escape pods. But we do detect a Malon freighter,
yes,
traveling in the distance at high impulse, and it's abandoned. Correct. We scan it. There are no life signs. So this freighter has been abandoned. All these escape pods are out there. And this thing is flying along through space.
Yeah.
So we go to the sick bay where we've beamed over the only two that were alive.
Yeah. And we realize that one of them is Controller Fessick, who was revived by the doctor. And Janeway's down there. And he says that they lost a lot of their crew, most of their crew, when all these ruptures started to happen. Mm-hmm. And then, Fessick says, listen, you got to get away because this freighter is going to explode. When it does, everything within a three light year radius will be basically disintegrated. So mm-hmm. Janeway says, all right, move Voyager to a distance of 5 light years. We jump back over to the bridge. We see Paris trying to answer these orders, but he cannot because the warp field has collapsed. And this is due to all the theta radiation disrupting subspace. And this is when Janeway decides to take the opposite plan, which is follow the Malon freighter,
head
which is
right to it.
Let's go there. And of course, the look on Fessick's face is great. He's like, say that again. Come again. Mm-hmm. He's a little shocked that we're going to do this. But this is really the only way to stop the explosion. Is to try to get on that freighter and stop it that way, because we don't have time. Yeah. With impulse engines, we would never be able to get away. So we're gonna basically lose our lives if we don't do something about it. And I like this exterior shot of Voyager chasing towards the fart ship. And then it cuts over to a bridge, like sort of a POV over the shoulder of Paris, looking at the view screen. And you see the Malon vessel, which is just hurtling forward. And
right in front of us there.
Yeah,
we're chasing it along. By the way, that shot of the view screen with Paris down there working, I remember doing those all the time.
Yeah.
It was always second unit. We never did it when we filmed the scenes. And I remember sometimes it was weeks or even months later sometimes that I'd do those second unit shots. And it was so confusing. Like, wait, what is this story again? Because we had done, so many episodes at that point after. And I was usually there by myself with like Dan Curry from the Viz Effects department. I know you did a lot of those too, but
being not as down many as front, you did. You
I did a more. Lot. Yeah. Because of the view screen. Cause I sat down there in front of the view screen.
So really the onus is upon yourself to sort of remember where you were during that time. And also the second unit director has to remind you what the heck's going on at this point, because they're usually shooting multiple shots basically covering different episodes worth of POVs over your shoulder right there. So I definitely I feel for you having to try to remember all
it was
that.
Always a easy. Weird day when I'd come in for that, because I'd usually come in just for that
and it'd just be you, right? No one else was there,
just me,
second unit director, cameraman, sound, that's it. Okay, the storage tanks are going to explode within 6 hours, so Janeway wants to assemble an away team to beam over, clear out sections one by one. And Fessick suggests using a nearby nebula as a shield from the blast. And then, this is his suggestion, his plan. And Janeway disagrees with that. She tells Chakotay to assemble an away team. And this is when Lee Ehrenberg's character Pelk yells out, "Wait, tell them about the Vihar." And these Vihar, we learn, are creatures that have been created by radiogenic wastes that reside in the Theta storage tanks. So now we have a little bit of this mystery of this lore or whatever, the boogeyman, the Malon boogeyman now. I think we'd now jump to engineering.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, Chakotay's looking at a display showing the Malon vessel. Schematics of the Malon vessel. Yeah. He decides that the best place to enter is this chamber, which has the least amount of radiation. And really to start from that chamber to vent gas from each chamber above it until they can get to the control room, the chamber that has the control room. And they realize that all the pressurization systems are offline. So they have to basically utilize the two airlocks that are on each deck or each chamber to manually, release this gas, vent this gas. And then the question by Vessick is, well, how's that going to stop us from being vented? And Neelix says, well, force fields. force fields. He spent a lot of time on a Talaxian garbage scow, I guess.
Yes, which we never knew. He says, knew that. 6 years I worked on a Talaxian garbage scow.
He was a garbage man.
Because he was a scrap.
He was a scrapper later, so that makes
it kind of does make sense.
Yeah, but his suggestion is pretty cool. Use force fields. We will use force fields to stop us from getting vented. And also, we find out that the doctor has come up with this inoculation that we can get this shot of, and this will prevent our cells from absorbing the radiation for about 2 to 3 hours. And then there's this again. There's a little interaction between Chakotay and
B'Elanna,
and man, he always sets her straight.
He's a tough cookie. On her. Yeah. They always write those scenes with him being like the dad. The tough guy.
The tough love, where he always says, Do you hear me? It's always this very militaristic, very stern sort of approach that Chakotay takes with B'Elanna, this tough love. And you know, and I love his line, B'Elanna, I need your expertise on this mission, not your bad mood. It's so classic. It's a classic line. And I love that that was included there.
We go to the mess hall next, and we find Neelix tasting what looks like pea soup.
It looks like split pea soup to me.
It looks like split pea soup. And it's a close up of him like trying to force himself to taste this. And he starts heaving and, you know, gagging on it.
Yeah.
And then he takes a bite, and then Chakotay walks in, and Chakotay says, you know, are you almost ready? And, you know, do you want to prepare anything for the crew? Anything left to do? He says, no, he's already prepared lunch, dinner, snacks for the crew, but he's still working on this Talaxian theta radiation remedy. So that's what it was. The split pea soup was that.
Yeah.
And he says it's crushed Rama leaf, it's Tertullian clove. And Chakotay's like, why don't you just use the doctor's inoculation? And Neelix is like, no, this is the thing that saved us before when, you know, we were exposed to radiation. We use this. This remedy is very important. So he adds more spices, I guess, to the thing. And takes another bite and starts to gag and vomit. And then Chakotay's starting to gag and vomit from that. And he pulls out like a chunk or something.
Yeah.
I wrote down, this is one of the silliest moments in the series so far.
Well,
it was scenery chewing silliness that I thought it was hilarious.
It is, but if you look at Robert Beltran, he is trying not to laugh. He's trying his hardest because, my goodness, Ethan Phillips is just playing it all the way. I mean, he's pulling out all the stops. He's like thinking, I'm going to milk this moment until there's nothing left. And he does. Yeah. I mean, it's very funny. It's very funny watching him do that.
Very funny. Harry does call though and say, you know, time to go to the transporter room. Yeah. We're ready to leave on the away mission. Chakotay leaves. Neelix has to take one more, dips his finger in and takes one more taste of it and sort of does another gag on the way out. Oh, he milked it. Wow.
He did.
It was amazing.
Good job.
We go into the hallway now. We see Paris running to catch up with B'Elanna.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, hey, aren't you forgetting something? She's like, what? What did I forget? I've got everything. He's like, no, saying goodbye. You didn't say goodbye to me.
Yes.
And she says, nah, I thought we might fight. It's a sweet scene. He kind of stops her for a minute, and they talk, and then he gives her a goodbye kiss. But did you notice in this scene the sound? So this was all looped, all the walking until we stop, and then it's not looped after that. Mm-hmm. And the sound changes. Like, you can literally hear
the difference,
the quality of our dialogue from the stuff they had us loop until I just hate that. It was like a no-brainer. We always looped the hallway scenes. It just takes away all of the natural spontaneity. Because we don't loop, you know, Roxanne and I weren't in the room together looping it.
No.
We shot the scene and then I loop it separate. By myself, line by line by line. She does hers line by line. Yep. So it's going to naturally be a little more awkward.
It's going to be disconnected. It's going to be disconnected. And then at the end, when you kiss her, it's a sweet moment, but I kind of wanted you to boop her nose as well before, just to kind of lighten the mood just a little bit more.
Yeah. We used to do that on set. Remember, we'd walk around and hit each other's combat.
Boop, boop. Yes, we did.
That was fun.
We booped each other quite a bit.
Yeah, it was childish fun. We go over to the man on ship. Yeah. And the team beams in. It was a cool beam in that space.
Yeah.
Neelix's first line as they beam in, he looks around and goes, well, a fresh coat of paint would brighten this up.
Yeah.
It's just like, dude, this place is a disaster. A fresh coat of paint is not going to fix this repurposed Borg ship.
No.
And by the way, he's in that red jumpsuit. All of a sudden, I was like, wait, what? Neelix has a red velvet jumpsuit for away missions? I've never seen this. I've never seen the red velvet jumpsuit.
Okay.
It's a whole new look.
I didn't even notice it.
The whole episode. He's in the red. It's very dark and smoky. And so wait,
was he wearing it when he was trying the soup?
I didn't notice it there, but I noticed it when you could see him full figure. And I was like, Where's that velour jumpsuit coming from? Yeah, okay. Why didn't he just go in a Starfleet uniform or something? Or I don't know, anything.
He wanted to throw back to the 80s, basically. I guess what so. It was. My goodness.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
They walk in and they realize that there's some kind of electrostatic cascade happening, because we do see static, like almost static electricity on the walls.
Yeah, on the ceiling area.
All VFX. That was very cool.
Yeah.
They realize that it's being caused by their tricorders. The energy from their tricorders are going to create this explosion or this.
Igniting the particles there.
Ignite the particles. And it's very dangerous. And by the way, I did notice that B'Elanna takes her top off very quickly. She goes down to like a tank top in this scene. I was like, what? Where did that come? Who wrote that? I don't think Brian Fuller wrote that.
I think it was Ken Bilay. When he gets a little, you know, that's how we'll pronounce his name. Bilay, if he causes these things to happen in the episode.
Yeah.
All right.
But she takes her top off, which, by the way, we were in jumpsuits, so she doesn't have a top. So I don't know how that is possible, but and we never wore tank tops underneath. So it was created just for her to have some skin, I guess.
That's it.
She kind of looked like Sarah Connor. That's why I put in the
The
tank, because she was down in a tank top with all the grease everywhere.
Yes.
That's why I put the Terminator thing in there.
Okay. Perfect. That's where it came from.
They realize that they're going to have to manually open these airlocks. Mm-hmm. And Chakotay sends Fesik and Torres to the injector port. And Pelk stays with the rest of them. So they're going to go manually open this. They can't use their tricorders or anything.
Mm-hmm.
We find them crawling in through some tubes, some kind of.
I said the Malon Jeffries. You're gonna say the Malon fart tubes? I said the Malon Jeffries tubes, but okay.
Yeah, look kind of like that, but I'm gonna call them fart tubes.
Fart tubes.
And she asked, "How can you even work in these conditions? This is unbelievable."
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "Well, actually, back home, I'm a sculptor.
I don't even do this normally, right?
Yeah." And then he goes on to basically say, like, our planet is the most beautiful place. Malon is the most beautiful place you can imagine. And they would choke on all their waste. It would destroy this beautiful planet if they didn't make these kind of sacrifices and get rid of this stuff. Get rid of the trash. Just avoid, like, pretend that we don't create trash. Pretend we don't have any trash in our lives.
I just got to say, at this point, when he's talking about that, all I could think about was our planet Earth and how much trash that we generate as human beings, and all the landfills and all the plastics and all the everything that is just not decomposing properly and that's not organic, and just how we are also, in a way, in essence, choking on our own trash too.
Absolutely. But they do get to this lever. They can't get it to work. It's they call to Chakotay and Neelix. and say, we can't get this thing to work.
But Pelk something's says, jamming the airlock controls. That's what
something's
it was.
Jamming it. And Pelk says, probably encrusted oxides or something on the, on the controls. And so he will go, he will go by himself. And Neelix gives him the doctor's inoculation before he goes.
An extra shot,
An extra shot, which is kind of nice. And he goes to manually unlock this, this thing. And we start to see some monster vision.
Yes, the monster POV.
Yes.
What lens was that? It was sort of,
I don't know if it was any particularly fancy lens. I think they did it in VFX. They did some treatment. Okay,
because it almost came off as like, you know how old 3D has like sort of that red and blue sort of edge into it? That's what it kind of looked like at some point.
It almost looked like heat vision or something.
Yeah, you know something like that.
But we do see the monster vision, and Pelk is like, he senses something, hears something. He calls out, "Who's there?" Tons of smoke in here, which I thought was really cool. And do you remember when we did scenes like this where there was this much smoke and nitrogen and all the stuff they use? The whole stage would just be filled. Like, you couldn't get away from it. Even when you weren't in the scene, it was just the whole stage was smogged up with all that stuff. And it had to be, or else the set would, you know, would just empty out. The smoke would just disappear. So
yeah, all that toxic smoke we had to endure.
Yes. We cut back to Neelix and Chakotay. They hear screams. They run, and he sort of Pelk sort of tumbles out into the back into the fart corridor, and and they check on him. B'Elanna and Fesik return.
Yeah.
As well.
And Pelk is saying to everybody that he was attacked. So everyone's thinking, what is he talking about? And unfortunately, you know, Pelk succumbs to his wounds and he dies right there.
Right there.
I was a little shocked. I was like, oh my goodness, he's already dead. So
yeah, I don't know. How did he die? Like,
I think
it kind of didn't make sense. Like,
well, you saw he had lacerations on his cheeks, right? So where he got hit. So evidently, whatever he was
radiation,
hit, the genetic material of whatever hit him was in his wounds, and I guess it caused him to die faster. I mean, he was more irradiated then at that point, is what I got out of it, but I don't know. It's a little confusing.
It's a little confusing. Like, the rules of this radiation that it can create monsters who don't die; they just turn into. Fart monsters, let's call them. I just want to call everything farts in this episode.
All right.
So the fart monster gets created because they're around the radiation too much. But Pelk dies when the fart monster touches him. It just, the rules seem to be a little fluid.
I think it's a little bit more than a touch. But yes, it seemed a little drastic for him to die from getting struck in the face twice or whatever it was. But anyway, they do beam his body back to Voyager because they want the doctor to do an autopsy and figure out what made him die, because everyone's just confused. They don't understand. Now we jump to the bridge and we learn that 5 decks have been vented so far of the gas. There's 10 to go. Janeway has a backup plan, plan B. She talks about there's an O-type star nearby, and if the freighter happens to explode in the star's corona, the star could actually absorb all of the theta radiation. So Tuvok is like, huh, okay, so just a little tiny nudge using well-timed tractor pulses, this could put the vessel on the correct trajectory towards that O-type star. So he thinks it's a good idea as well, and of course, this is just the backup plan, but this is the plan that Janeway has come up with.
Plan B.
Plan B.
Always good to have a plan B.
It is.
We go to the ship, back to the Malon ship again. Neelix, B'Elanna, and Fesik are there. And B'Elanna is starting to show some signs of radiation poisoning.
Yeah.
We see her hand first with some sores and blisters, and then we cut back to her face, and suddenly she's got the blisters on her face.
Yeah, and Fesik calls it freighter blight.
That's right. That's right. And she's going to need treatment for this right away.
Fesik says he can. He says our infirmary has stuff to treat this. So Chakotay orders B'Elanna to go with Fesik to the infirmary. She thinks she's fine, but he does order her, you need to go. They do head over there. And there's a joke about how B'Elanna's like, this is your infirmary. This looks, I mean, because it just, it doesn't.
She says it looks like a morgue.
Yeah, it doesn't
look because it looks like the rest of the ship. There's like smoke everywhere and goo.
It's just grime.
Then there's a chamber in the middle. She looks inside and there's like this radiated corpse inside there. And we find out that this was a core laborer. This is what happened to the core laborers. And they brought him back for some treatments when all the, you know, everything started falling apart.
Yep.
And
I think they gave a number before. Only 3 out of 10 core laborers survive a mission, I think.
She's like, why would they do this? And he goes, well, you can make in 2 months, you can make more than most Malins make in a lifetime.
Yeah. So that's huge money.
Yep. Tons of money. And she's like, well, who cares? You're dead if you're going to make tons of money. And he goes, no, it goes to your family.
Yeah.
So it's a very heroic, martyr kind of job to take.
Most definitely. I mean, you are, it's sort of a mission that has no return. You know what I'm saying? For most of these guys. And they understand it. They understand what they're getting into. So Fessick uses this subdermal injector, which compared to our hypospray, it looks like a it's a toaster. It's huge. It's like massive and very torture device looking. You're right.
It looks like a torture device. Yeah.
And it injects analeptic compounds, which reverse the cell damage. And I love how his lines are very similar to what our modern doctors say. This is going to sting a bit. You might feel a little bit of a sting. And so she deals with it. And so he injects her. And then at this point, I think we jump to Astrometrics.
Astrometrics next. Yeah. Tuvok comes in and Seven says, here's the calculations for the captain's plan B. Mm-hmm. And then he starts to leave. She goes, and here's some calculations for plan C in case that fails. These are structural enhancements to protect the ship from the radiation explosion. And then Tuvok, as he's leaving, he goes, is there a plan D? So there's not a lot of optimism that this plan is going to work.
No.
But at least we have a plan C, B, and C.
All right. So now we're back on the Malon freighter. And as they're working away vigorously to get the job done, all of a sudden the deck that they're on starts to decompress. Yeah. And they're like, who did that? I mean, how is this happening? So now they have to get off this deck as soon as possible. So as they're kind of climbing up this one stairwell or this one ladder, everyone gets out except for Chakotay. He's the last person. And as he's looking back during the decompression, looks like a hyperspanner or something flies towards him. And just
there's like two plastic tubes. I feel like they were metal.
I feel like he was climbing plastic. Up.
No. And it looks like somebody was standing there and they said, okay, Robert, start climbing and we'll go like 3, 2, 1, and then we'll toss these plastic tubes at you. and it looked silly to me.
Right, I don't know where you got plastic because they were silvery metallic in terms of their composition. So they probably were in real life
and lightweight. They looked like it looked like a kid's slinky toy or something.
No, not even close. No, it looked like some type of a section of a piping or tubing
He gets knocked out, but they threw a couple props at him and he fell out of the close-up. It was like...
It reminded me of the episode when we're in the prison ship and then I'm trying to speak to all the prisoners and they start throwing debris at me and I get hit.
Very similar type of thing.
Yeah.
but we go to B'Elanna and the gang and they look back. They're like, where's Chakotay?
Yeah.
And he's not there.
Yeah. She tries to hail him. No response.
So she calls the ship.
Yeah.
And
Kim Harry responds. Look at this. I get to say a few words here.
Yeah, you have a few lines.
I have a few lines. So she hails Voyager. Kim responds. She asks for him to beam. She asks Harry to beam Chakotay to sickbay. Kim does it. Chakotay is okay. And everyone breathes a sigh of relief. Now there's an argument that breaks out between Fessick and Torres about how these airlocks opened. So she thinks that maybe that he had sabotaged it or something like that.
And he says, no. It's his fault.
Yeah. And he's like, I didn't do anything. And while they're doing this, Monster Vision happens again now.
Monster Vision.
The creature, Fart Monster Vision is happening. The creature is watching. Vision. Fart Vision is happening. Yes. And we jump to the bridge where Janeway and Tuvok are there. Tuvok suggests that he beamed they're off, over.
Yeah, they're off at a side panel,
yeah,
you know, a side console. And I love that angle because I feel like they pulled out, to put the camera behind that side, they pulled out something that we don't normally pull out. Like, it was an angle we don't normally see.
Right. I also thought it was cool because that side station is usually the station that Torres sits at,
yeah,
when she's on the bridge. So
yeah,
it's interesting that there's, you know, they actually played it out there, because this whole scene is about Tuvok saying, I can beam over and take over the mission. And Janeway's like,
very defensive. She's no, like, no,
no. And Tuvok's like, her emotions, they're going to affect her. They're going to get the best of her. This could be a major problem. Yeah.
Yep.
And Janeway's like, you know what? I don't think that's right. And Tuvok's like, logic suggests that we need to. And she goes, no, it's not about logic. It's about trust. Me trusting in B'Elanna. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she says this at the station that B'Elanna is typically sitting at, I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. It's very cool. Very cool. Nice little scene. Janeway ends it by saying she's going to come through for all of us.
Yeah.
Then we go back to the Malon ship. Neelix walks in. I love this little moment. He walks in on B'Elanna, who's kind of down, sitting on the ground with her eyes closed. Mm-hmm. And he's like, are you okay? And she goes, I'm fine. I'm fine.
Yeah.
And there's kind of an awkward moment.
Yeah.
She goes, report. She doesn't know what to
say. Because he caught her meditating. So yeah. I did make a note that when he asks her if she's fine, I just said, God, that is so looped, because it just, you could hear the background.
Oh, really? Was
it didn't sound like anything else that came before that or after that. Again, that's usually the signal or the how you realize something's looped, because there is a difference in the noise
the tone.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We find out that the last deck has been vented and that there is a clear path to the control room. And she also sort of cops to the fact that she was meditating. And
Neelix starts
laughing. Yeah, but Neelix starts laughing. He's like, you? And yeah. I just thought it was kind of interesting that he sort of took that option or that choice as an actor to kind of laugh at that point. But so we get a little more backstory, what's going on there. And
I also like at the end when she leaves, we hang on him again for a minute. And he adds another moment of like, the railing had goo on it or something.
Yeah, he touched
it. And he sort of touches it and looks at his hand. I was like, what is that goo? And I'm sure that was not scripted.
No, and that's what's so great with Ethan Phillips is that, look at this. Because typically it's just going to be a shot on him reacting to her leaving. And that's it, right? It's a shot on his face. But he made that choice to touch that railing and realize how gooey it is.
How
and
gross.
Again, it just adds so much more to the scene when something like that is included. So good job, Ethan Phillips.
Very good. Now we go to Astrometrics again.
Mm-hmm.
And Seven says the control room is still too heavily shielded to get a reading. So stand by. Don't go in the control room, basically.
Yeah, because Torres is actually asking Seven to scan this control room.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Fessick, we go back and he says, the theta dampening field is still active, so it should be safe to go inside.
Mm-hmm.
So they go inside.
No, but let's make it clear. Torres goes, well, you go first then, is what she says.
Oh, yeah,
right
she
there.
Does.
Yeah. She does.
But they do go inside, and he's just said, oh, yeah, it's safe in there. It's fine. And then the doors open. They go in, and there's bodies on the floor.
Yeah.
It's not safe. There's dead bodies on the floor. And there's more smoke than ever. They're coughing. It doesn't seem safe to me.
Yes.
He just said it's safe. I'm going to say it doesn't seem safe.
Yeah. Fessick starts punching some console, and he discovers that theta gas has actually leaked into the warp manifold. So it's a lot worse off than he thought it was going to be. And Neelix then informs us that they've got 10 minutes. 10 whole minutes before the entire freighter explodes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
B'Elanna works some power conduits or something. And she said, we can seal them one at a time. We can seal these leaks one at a time. And so we go to sick bay from here. And Chakotay wakes up and he wants to go back on the ship. And the doctor says, nope, you can't go back over there. And the doctor also says that he found some unidentified tissue in Pelk's autopsy.
Yeah, in the wounds that Pelk has.
Yeah. In the wounds, yeah. And then the doctor calls Seven and says, scan for life forms on that ship, because there's another life form. It's not Pelk's tissue. There's something else over.
Right. And then the doctor finds out that the tissue is saturated with theta radiation, but it is not showing signs of decay. So that's what's so confusing to the doctor. So that makes him feel like there's something that's alive there. So it came from something or someone that has developed a resistance to the radiation. So the doctor is hailing Seven to scan for this life form. So she does recalibrate the sensors and start scanning for this new life form that the doctor has found.
Because the doctor tells Seven, he says it could be hidden, it could be blending in with ambient radiation. So she recalibrates. And now we go back to the Malon ship. There's a power surge and they can't continue venting these chambers. This power surge, suddenly B'Elanna says, well, you know what? This was triggered at a station on this deck right nearby.
Yeah.
So that's weird. There's nobody else out there. Suddenly, Janeway calls from the bridge. They have detected a life form. The doctor was right. Seven recalibrated things, found that there is another life form.
Life form, they believe, killed Pelk. So it's time for them to get out of there. Torres says they just lost power. Janeway says that they're diverting the freighter to a nearby star.
They're going to plan B.
Plan B in action, and that they need exit the control room in order to be beamed out. And as they try to leave, the doors close in front of them and they jam. And so now Seven detects the life form entering the control room. It now attacks Neelix. It attacks Fessick. And then it comes for Torres. And now we finally have a reveal of who or what this individual is. And we see that it is a core laborer, probably the same one, so the same individual that was sent down to the core that didn't want to go in the very beginning. We talked about that.
Yeah. And he looks just like a radiation monster. He doesn't look Malon at all. He's bubbles and goo.
He's bubbled
everywhere.
Up all over on one half of his face, definitely.
And B'Elanna says in this moment when he finally reveals himself, she says, "Don't make me kill you." Mm-hmm. And he responds, I'm already dead.
Yeah.
That's a classic action movie line right there.
It really is. It really is.
It's good.
Voyager maneuvers the Malon vessel towards the O-type star. And of course, our Malon fart monster alters the course and away from the star. And there are 3 minutes until detonation. Torres then just, she realizes there's nothing that she can do. And she knocks this core laborer down. But she does try to speak to him. She does try to, because she sees that anger has consumed him as anger consumed her as a child and all the lessons she's been trying to learn from Tuvok. So now she's trying to get this guy, try to get through to him and say that, I know you're angry. I know you want revenge, but this is not the answer. And, he doesn't listen. So basically that's when she resorts to violence and beats him down. She shuts down the maneuvering thrusters so that the Malon vessel can then be guided by Tuvok towards the O-type star again. She runs out with Fessick and with Neelix just in time out of the control room to be beamed by Harry back onto Voyager. And the vessel, we see a cool exterior shot of the vessel hurtling towards the O-type star and the explosion. Again, another cool visual effects shot of that. We then show up in sickbay where we see Chakotay and Torres.
We see Chakotay and Torres standing by one of the biobeds and
away
from everyone. Yeah. She's a wreck. Like, she's got grease and debris and goo all over her body. I just felt like this moment was very weird. And normally I love unconventional staging, but it's like she was sort of facing to one direction and he was facing the other and they weren't looking at each other, but they were talking to each other. It was a little weird staging, I thought.
It is weird.
Chakotay does say to her that maybe the meditation is working.
Yes.
That he saw that. Maybe it's working. She should keep it up. And she goes, "Don't expect me to make a habit of this."
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny.
The doctor interrupts their little aside conversation. Mm-hmm. He says that he has repaired most of Torres's cellular degradation. And Janeway sort of jumps into that shot. And she tells Fessick that they've contacted a Malon transport vessel. They are going to rendezvous with that vessel. Fessick then sort of laments on, what is he going to tell his superiors what happened?
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. How am I going to explain what happened? And B'Elanna says, tell them it's real.
Tell them the Fahar are not a myth.
are not a myth.
Yes. The ending of my haiku.
Yes, exactly.
Now, I wrote Torres' quarters, but isn't this your quarters as well? Or no? Are you guys...
I think we use the same place on the set, but they change out the dressing or something.
No. I mean, aren't you living together now as characters or no?
I think so.
No, you're still separate. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We go into her quarters and I wrote down, why is she still so dirty and filthy? Like if she had been to sick bay, they would have cleaned her up. They would have put her into I don't know. It seemed like she walked out of sick bay. I know they fixed her radiation cellular damage, but yeah. She's a mess. I don't know.
Don't have a sonic shower in sickbay, so that's probably why she's still a mess, is what I'm thinking. I mean, was she in the prior shot? Was she cleaner than she was in this shot?
No, she was still dirty.
Still dirty. Okay.
It just seemed like they would have cleaned her up or something. But I know they got to get to a sonic shower here.
Yeah.
Yeah. She goes in, she takes her top off. So we've got those awkward kinds of shots where you have to avoid any frontal nudity and
her
standing in front of the mirror with her top off and looking at herself. And she sort of leans into the mirror, has these flashbacks of the rage and the fight. Yeah, I was a little confused, I got to be honest, in what the story was saying. Okay. Although one thing you said makes it a little clearer, I guess, which is, she saw in this guy the same kind of rage that she has in herself, which I guess is what she's struggling with and fighting, but it was not clear to me why this was so
clear cut. Okay.
No. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she has this moment of flashbacks in the mirror and then she steps in the sonic shower and we go off of kind of a vis effects of her going from that dirty, greasy, grimy look to
clean.
things starting to become clean in the middle of that sonic shower close up. And that's how we end the episode.
Okay. What is your lesson that you have learned from this episode?
I was trying to come up with a lesson. What I came up with was you can't bury your feelings or experiences or anger any more than you can bury the toxic garbage that they try to pretend doesn't exist. But I do think that the story really is about B'Elanna and maybe there is something in her sort of seeing herself in these Mehlon and what they were, particularly the monster Mehlon, but what was your theme?
Well, I mean, just going back to Tuvok's meditation lessons with her, just not to allow emotion to go unchecked, because that is when it becomes chaotic and destructive. So really to keep your emotion in check. Emotions, when they run away, can be very dangerous. So that's pretty much what
they can turn into a monster.
They can turn into a fart monster. A
fart monster, exactly. Mm-hmm. What was your rating on this?
I'm going to say 7.0.
Wow. Yeah,
I'll leave it there.
Okay. 7. I'm going to give it a 5.5.
Okay. You're going 5. Really low.
0.5. And I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. Because I do think this was the intention of this was to be a monster movie, like a monster episode. Mm-hmm. And I just don't. I feel like the monster came in way too late. Like we never saw him. There was never any clear threat by the monster. It felt like a myth, but yet it was real in the end. I just feel like the monster, somebody should have said, the monster's real. The audience should have had an experience that this there really was a monster. Because otherwise
they have that experience from the fart vision? I mean, isn't that kind of their experience?
But there
already?
Was no threat. There was no, like he wasn't doing anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he could have, locked the levers and done all that stuff. It just didn't feel like the monster was very tangible and real early enough to maintain this monster movie story.
All right.
He really didn't become a threat till that last scene.
Okay.
A direct threat. So
that's when
I give it a 5.5.
All right. Let us know what everyone else thought, what the captains and the admirals thought.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Captains and admirals' average rating for Juggernaut is a 7. Wow.
I'm on the mark.
I would have, I got to be honest with you, I would have gone lower on this, except that I think Alan Craker did a great job directing.
He did.
I think Roxanne did a great job in her work. And our guest stars were really good. And everybody, you know, I felt like the execution all around was really strong. That's why I didn't give it like a 4, honestly.
I would have gone lower, but because my buddy Lee Ehrenberg is in it, I couldn't go lower. No. I had to keep it at the 7 zone. So there you go.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, good. Well, there you go. There's Juggernaut.
Right.
There it is.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for joining in for this week's review and discussion of Juggernaut.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us for the fart episode. it is a memorable and important episode.
Yes, we will be reviewing an episode which is arguably Robbie McNeil's best directed episode of Star Trek Voyager, Someone to Watch Over Me.
You're kidding next me. That's week. Next week?
That's right, my friend. So I'm very excited to be able to finally tackle your pièce de résistance as a Voyager director was this one. So
yeah, this is a good episode. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that because I directed it. It's just a really good episode.
It was a very good episode. Yeah. All right. So Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Everyone else, we'll see you next week.